It's time to read the East Valley News. Thank you for joining me. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Today we're going to be focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe, including Kyrene Tempe Union score high in state report card, pending sales listing sluggish in two Ahwatukee zip codes, East Valley Women's League sets holiday fundraiser, study pet poop pickup outreach effective, and at 101, Tempe veterans still recalls kamikaze attack. Our first article from the Ahwatukee Foothills News. Kyrene Tempe Union score high in state report card by Paul Mariniak. The two school districts and one of two charters serving Ahwatukee scored nothing but A and B grades in the annual State Board of Education's report cards. Five of Tempe Union's six high schools aced their report card for the 2024-25 school year, with Mountain Point getting a B, a grade drop from its 2023-24 score. Kyrene had a mix of A and B scores. Horizon Honors Elementary and Secondary Schools also scored an A, while the State Department of Education's database did not list Basis Ahwatukee among the Basis Charter Schools. The report cards also are issued for districts as a whole, and Kyrene received an A, while Tempe Union's district grade is under review. A district spokeswoman said the department is reviewing data for Tempe Union's online school. The report cards are based on a variety of factors, but primarily on student academic growth and proficiency in English language arts, math, and science based on standardized state testing. The preliminary grades were released October 29th. Tempe Union's grade was officially under review, while a B was awarded to Mountain Point High School, which earned an A the previous academic year. Meanwhile, two of Kyrene School District's six middle schools received an A, with B awarded to two others, and the other two are listed as under review. An A grade was earned by Altadena and Acamel Al Middle Schools, while a B was handed to Apprendi and Centennial. No grade was listed for Kyrene and Pueblo Middle Schools, and no explanation was provided by the state for the grading delay. Among Kyrene's 19 elementary schools, five earned a B and the rest an A. B grades were handed to Bresis, Kalina, Mariposa, Lomas, and Manitas. Three Kyrene elementary schools, all in Ahwatukee, were among the top 50 performers in Arizona. Monte Vista scored fourth place statewide, while Bo Sierra was among the top 25 and Cerritos among the top 35. Kyrene Superintendent Laura Tonez hailed the ratings, stating, "Kyrene School District is proud to be an A-rated district and home to 25 exceptional schools, including 16 that also received A ratings this year. This achievement belongs to every school in Kyrene. It reflects our dedicated educators, hardworking students, and visionary leaders, as well as the focused implementation of our strategic plan, now in its third year, and delivering measurable results." The Arizona Board of Education began issuing letter grades in 2010 so that parents could be better informed in deciding where they wanted to send their children. It is mandated by state law. There were no letter grades awarded for the 2019-2020 and 2020-2021 school years because of the disruption caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. The state uses four factors in determining letter grades for each school. The first is academic performance, including scores on state assessments. Second is growth metrics, which are students improving. Third is the learning environment and subgroup performance. The learning environment includes school safety, attendance rates, and other factors that impact student performance. Subgroups include minority students, low-income students, students with disabilities. The final factor is the weighting of scores. Each is weighted differently with the goal to ensure both growth and performance are emphasized. Unrelated to the issuance of the new grades, Kyrene administration last week disclosed at the governing board's October 28th meeting its ratings of principals and teachers for the 2024-25 school year. Among certified staff, 332 were deemed highly effective and 424 effective, while one was rated developing and none were deemed ineffective. And among principals, 8 were rated highly effective and the other 17 effective. The district also said that 88% of last school year's teachers, or 749, returned for the current school year. Among the rest, 2% retired, 8% resigned, and 1% were not renewed for another year. The top reasons for resigning involved family, a long commute, or a family relocation. That accounted for 27 teachers, while 15 others decided to change careers, and 8 cited job stress in leaving. This marks the third consecutive year that 87 to 88% of teachers from the prior year signed up to work for Kyrene again. That was Kyrene Tempe Union score high in state report card. Our next article, pending sales, listing sluggish in 2 Ahwatukee zip codes, also by Paul Mariniak. Data for home sales last month are still a week away, but September sales for 2 of Ahwatukee's 3 zip codes showed a year-over-year decline in pending sales and new listings and longer days on the market. And both closed sales and prices of those sold homes differed significantly in 85044 and 85048, according to data from Phoenix Realtors, the Valley's largest association of real estate professionals. Data for 85045 was not available. In 85044, closed sales in September rose 35.7% over September of 24, with a median sales price of $511,000, representing a 6.9% increase. The average price of the 38 sold homes was $505,437, a 12.9% year-over-year decline. In 85048, the 28 homes that sold in September represented a 3.4% year-over-year decline, while the median sales price of $592,000 was down 2.5% in that same time period. The average sale price of $642,000 was 2% above September of 24. Pending sales fell nearly 43% year-over-year in 85044 and by almost 61% in 85048, while new listings in both zip codes fell by nearly 19% from September of 24. That decline was reflected in total inventory in those two zips, as the number of 80 homes on the market in 85044 flatlined year-over-year and fell by 6.8% in that time frame to 82. Despite the fact that the homes that sold in both zip codes were on the market 30% longer than their September 24 counterparts, 75 days in 85044 and 81 days in 85048, sellers still got close to their asking price. The average percentage of asking price received by sellers in 85044 was 98% and 97% in 85048. Valley-wide, Phoenix Realtors said closed sales climbed more than 10%. New listings rose and inventory expanded, signaling renewed momentum in the market. Closed sales were comfortably up last month compared to September of last year, said Phoenix Realtors Board President Christy Walker. While this is an encouraging sign, the rebound we saw in September may slow this month as higher interest rates and the ongoing government shutdown weigh on activity. The Phoenix metro region also showed a slight year-over-year increase in the median price, though that $480,000 price was well below the median for those sold in Ahwatukee homes in September. With only a few months left in 2025, we've seen great progress from 2024's market, even with the challenges we may see in the next month or so, Walker said. We're optimistic that the market will continue to regain its footing and balance out as we head into 2026. The Cromford Report, a leading analyst of the Valley housing market, ranked Phoenix as equally favorable to sellers and buyers in as much as it landed 9th in its ranking of 18 submarkets in the region that it monitors closely. But it suggested that across the Valley, sellers are still having trouble getting as much as they think their home is worth. The primary reason for these trends is that supply is moving higher, it said earlier this month. Demand is also improving, but at a painfully slow pace so far. If we get the unusual seasonal pattern for supply, we should see it reach a top in mid-November, and then sellers can enjoy 6 weeks of declining competition. It's harder to predict demand, as it tends to be driven by a lot of different factors, some of which are emotional rather than financial. At the moment, overall demand is about 20% below normal, but it could easily move in either direction from here. That was pending sales listings sluggish in two Ahwatukee zip codes. Our next article, East Valley Women's League sets holiday fundraiser, by AFN staff. Since its founding in 2001, the East Valley Women's League has been steadfast in its mission to uplift women and children throughout the valley. And this month, it hopes other women will help while having a good time with its Jingle and Mingle social at 6 p.m. on November 20th at the Oakwood Country Club at 24218 Oakwood Boulevard in Sun Lakes. Tickets are $75 and available at evwl.org. The women-only event will feature a pianist, dinner with a drink ticket, a 50-50 raffle, a wine pull, and mystery boxes, in addition to silent and live auctions. The fundraiser will support a group that over the past 24 years has funneled over $2 million into the community, with over $400,000 earmarked for scholarships. By doing so, they have touched the lives of more than 45,000 individuals. The league, comprising 57 active women and 70 life members who live in the East Valley and Ahwatukee, operates entirely on the generosity of corporate and private sponsors, along with individual contributions. The league aims to raise $150,000 to support programs that help people of all ages. It supports pregnant teens navigate the challenges of high school and motherhood, brings comfort to homebound women, and care packages to chemotherapy patients at Ironwood Cancer Center, and provides a free suit and accessories to high school boys for college and job interviews. One of the most notable programs is the Cinderella Affair, which provides free prom dresses and accessories to high school girls. The league has given away over 17,000 prom dresses since 2002. Another major initiative is its Inner Expressions Art Therapy Program for women and children in need. Founded by sisters Tara Stanton of Tempe and Tracy Wereshek of Ahwatukee, the league is a qualified nonprofit under the Arizona Charitable Tax Credit Program, allowing donors to receive a dollar-for-dollar credit on their state income tax payments, and it also has drawn the support of various local businesses, most notably by Dixon Flannel in Tempe, which donated the use of its warehouse to store and distribute the prom dresses during the Cinderella Affair. Each member of the league volunteers to serve on two committees so members can maintain a vigorous community outreach. This year's officers include President Rosie Kirchhoff, past President Amanda Thompson, Vice President Darla Erickson, Fundraising Chair Nancy Mann, Treasurer Louise Austin, Technology Chair Jean Shapiro, Secretary Community Liaison Laura Brown, and Membership Committee Chair Christy Bonefight. That was East Valley Women's League sets holiday fundraiser. You are listening to the East Valley News on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Did you know that if you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org? Then, click on the link for broadcast info and audio. Today, we're focusing on the news of the past week from Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm Bill Carney, continuing on. Study, Pet Poop Pickup Outreach Effective, by Jerry Capel. Results have come back from a study that measured whether a City of Phoenix initiative to remind people to pick up after their pets had a positive effect. In a word, yes. The research focused specifically on the Pima Canyon and Telegraph Pass trails, both in Ahwatukee foothills. The verdict? A 28% decrease in pet waste at the former and an 8% decrease at the latter. These changes were significant, and they were encouraging to see, said Luis Weisel, Chief Water Quality Inspector for the Phoenix Water Services Department. However, more work needs to be done to keep the outreach going and keep the public involved and also aware. Wiesel said the entire project ran for 3 years and cost $94,000. The city embarked on the study to help fulfill a requirement under the MS4 permit issued by the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, according to the report from GHD Services Incorporated, titled Pet Waste Public Outreach Evaluation. Wiesel said Phoenix has been finding elevated levels of E. coli in water samples since it began testing in 2009, and getting more people to pick up pet poo was one factor in mitigating stormwater pollution. When asked if the city sampled the water after the recent heavy rains in September and October, Wiesel said no. The data for the study were drawn from the Stop Pollution Bag It, Tie It, Trash It campaign that ran from October 2024 to February of 2025. It was a collaboration between the Phoenix Water Services Department's Environmental Services Division and Phoenix Parks and Recreation. City staff held monthly events at the trailheads, posted 38 times on social media, and publicized the campaign on two local TV channels. It removed pet waste from the trails before and after the initiative and sent the data, along with outreach information, to a consultant. The terms of sheer numbers, more pet waste was removed after the outreach than before. Over a 3-week period, an average of 6 pounds was removed in February versus 3.5 pounds in September at Pima Canyon, and 4.7 pounds versus 2.2 pounds at Telegraph Pass. Unsurprisingly, however, the number of trail users was significantly higher in February, so the amount of poop per park user decreased. At Pima Canyon, the number of weekly trail visitors averaged 6,369 in February versus 2,599 in the higher temperatures of late September and early October. At Telegraph Pass, the average was 1,979 in February and only 769 in September-October. To account for the increase in trail users, the report normalized the data to pet waste per 100 visitors. With that in mind, the numbers showed the more promising results. That's why we conducted this study, to change people's behavior and make a positive impact on the community, Wiesel stated. Although the report's key findings indicated that the interventions of public outreach to improve pet waste disposal may have indeed been effective, it also stated that various complexities weakened the statistical significance. The pet waste report also included a dozen recommendations for the city to strengthen future efforts and build on the foundation of the study. They included more outreach, signage, and pet waste stations, particularly in hot spots where pet waste is most prevalent. Moving forward, Wiesel said, the city will participate in several community events and continue its social media outreach. Phoenix Water also purchased 17 pet waste stations that Downtown Phoenix's Clean and Green team placed throughout downtown. However, in an email, a Phoenix Water Services Department spokesperson said there are no plans to install additional signage. The temporary Stop Pollution signs were removed after the campaign. She did note, though, that there are permanent signs at major trailhead entrances listing the Park Code of Conduct. They include a section about pets, stating that off-leash pets and failing to remove animal waste are not permitted. Ahwatukee resident Janet Kirby, who walks her dog Bobby Dazzle near the Pima Canyon trailhead, said she'd like to see more signs, poop bag stations, and lidded waste receptacles at the neighborhood park inlets, not just major trailheads. The signs about pet waste are all when you're right there in the bathrooms and ramadas, she said. They're not at the little side entrances where most neighbors go in. Kirby also recommended that the city partner with local schools to have students do outreach about picking up pet waste as part of their community service hours. As a side benefit, she added, then they gain appreciation for the trails. Additionally, Kirby said, she'd like to see scofflaws fined for not cleaning up their pets' poop. Phoenix Municipal Code Section 2712 addresses animal waste and its disposal, but it does not state any penalties. Weasel said that while they want to raise awareness, staff and volunteers can't be at the trails 24/7. The city can only do so much, he said. People need to do the right thing. That was Study, Pet Poop Pickup Outreach Effective. Our next article. At 101, Tempe veteran still recalls kamikaze attack. By Lee Chappelle. He's from a moment in time when young men regarded it as an honor to defend their country, the greatest generation. You try to tell people that today and they just don't understand it, said Larry Cantera, a World War II veteran who at 101 is still sharp and spry. It was a duty at the time. There were so many guys who didn't come back. Those guys, man, they're the best. Cantera graduated from Globe High School on a Friday in 1943. The following Monday, he was off to war as an enlisted man in the U.S. Navy. The 18-year-old was manning a 5-inch gun aboard the escort carrier USS Sangamon in the Pacific Ocean in the largest naval battle in history when the ship was hit by a Japanese kamikaze. The way he was coming in, he looked like he wanted to land on the ship. Well, he landed all right, said Cantera, a former longtime Tempe resident now living in Ahwatukee. The enemy aircraft ripped a hole in Sangamon's flight deck and exploded. Due to the load of fuel on board the ship for its aircraft, a huge fireball erupted on the flight deck, hangar deck, and fuel deck. Swinging through the wind, uncontrolled, literally fanned the flames. The explosion threw both of the elevators up in the air and down, Cantera said, and the bad part of the whole thing is we couldn't get the fire out. It was all still going at night, and we were lit up out there in the ocean like a searchlight, and you're going now from 30 to 40 miles per hour to about 5 miles per hour. The ship began to list. Certain compartments on each side of the ship were blown up, and they had water in them, Cantera said, so that tilted the ship. Many men, believing the Sangamon would sink, jumped to their death into shark-infested waters. I'll never forget that night, Cantera said. We're all on watch. We're just sitting down there on the ocean, like a sitting duck, waiting for more aircraft to come in. Eventually, Cantera and a buddy walked to the edge of the ship. He said, Hey, Larry, I think it's time for us to go, Cantera said. We looked around, and all I said was, Hey, Jim, not yet. Larry Cantera did not give up the ship. Cantera recalls burials at sea when those lost were placed in canvas bags and slid off the ship into the Pacific Ocean. It's kind of tough. A lot of them did a lot more than I ever thought of doing, he said. Finally, the fire aboard the USS Sangamon was extinguished. It began to right itself enough by daybreak that with an escort from other U.S. vessels, it made it to a landing that U.S. Marines had captured. Before it was hit, the Sangamon named the Sangamon River in Illinois, and its crew played a role in crippling the Japanese fleet in the Battle of Leyte Gulf, which contributed to turning the outcome of World War II. It was all really an experience, Cantera said. We were kind of thinking, as young people, that we wanted to fight. We wanted to go to war and fight the Japanese because we were being invaded. We wanted to do something about it. Shortly after enlisting, Cantera found himself at Camp Shoemaker in Dublin, California. He said the Navy ran enlistees through a boot camp fast as they could. The second morning at Shoemaker, he and a few others were marched to an office. The guy says, You know, we have a great football team right here, Cantera said. They'd look at our records and saw we played high school. He said, If you want to play football, you don't have to worry about going overseas at all. We looked at each other and just said, No, that's not why we were there. The next day, we were in that same muster line. They called us up again, but this time they marched us the opposite way, right to a ship. We were out on this aircraft carrier. It was like they were telling us, Hey, we'll show you. After the war, Cantera coached football around the world. Third world countries didn't want doctors and scientists. They wanted to learn American football, he said. He was defensive coordinator of Coach Frank Cush's ASU teams in the 1970s when the Sun Devils won 8 straight Western Athletic Conference titles and 5 bowl games, including beating Nebraska in the 1975 Fiesta Bowl to cap an unbeaten season. ASU led the conference defensively every year. They were great memories with great people, some great players, Quintero said. He later would become head coach at Northern Arizona, where the program had struggled. While his overall record was below 500, he eventually did turn it around with back-to-back 7-4 seasons. But his greatest claim to fame in Flagstaff was the roster of assistant coaches he hired. 4 of them would go on to be head coaches in the NFL. Bill Callahan of the Raiders, Brad Childress of the Vikings, Marty Morningweg of the Lions, and a promising young offensive line coach. Lavelle Edwards, who was coach at Brigham Young and a good friend of mine, called and told me he had a great young offensive line coach, Quintero said. I told him I was going to Sacramento on a recruiting trip and couldn't hire anybody right then. Well, I get to Sacramento, and guess who was there waiting? This guy followed me off the plane, grabbing the back of my shirt all the way down the baggage claim, telling me how bad he wanted the job. That was Andy Reid, who became coach of the Philadelphia Eagles and now of the Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. He is the only NFL coach to win 100 games with 2 franchises and the only coach to appear in 4 consecutive conference championships with 2 different franchises. I would go listen to Andy work with our players, and he was an incredible teacher, Quintero said. They all were. I credit our success up there to those 4 guys. Quintero, at 101, still works out with weights and rides 20 minutes on an exercise bike each day. His mindset is, if you don't do it every day, you're going to be a slob, said Quintero's son, Jay. Well, Quintero countered, you've got to keep the body limber. He still drives himself to Arizona Community Church on South Tempe every Sunday. I just stay away from driving at night, he said. Quintero is expected to ride in a convertible Tuesday at the Tempe Veterans Parade. It very seldom ever gets to things like this, he said. Well, he acknowledges, it'll come with a flood of memories. I kind of reflect back to the buddies, the friends that we lost on the ship, Quintero said, and I think about the other people, the relatives and the buddies that you had in high school who never came back, what they did and what they sacrificed for our country. That's what I think about. They were the real heroes. I was just lucky. That was at 101, Tempe veteran still recalls kamikaze attack. Thank you for joining me today for the East Valley News for Ahwatukee and Tempe. I'm your volunteer reader, Bill Carney. Stay tuned for the Arizona Republic, coming up next on Sun Sounds of Arizona.